My name is Norman Barth, and this is a second this week session on some global issues. And the issue we're going to talk about this evening is water. I was a little late getting here because I was at the second setting, and I apologize for that. Kind of reminds me of the mother who was trying to wake her son up to go to school, and he was late, and she said, "Now you better get up." And he said, "I don't want to go to school today." She said, "I'll be back in 20 minutes, and you better be up ready to go to school." Well, she came back in 20 minutes, and her son was still in bed. And she said, "Now you got to get up and get going." He said, "I don't want to go." She said, "Well, give me two reasons why you shouldn't go to school." Well, he said, "For one reason, the kids don't like me. And the second reason is the teachers don't like me either. And you give me two good reasons why I ought to go to school." She said, "Well, you're 44 years old and you're the principal." Sometimes you do run late. I do want to bring to your attention two books that are available in the bookstore. One is State of the World by Lester Brown, 1989, which is a book that comes out annually. And it's a book that looks at some of the problems that the world is facing. This particular issue talks about halting land degradation, re-examining the world's food prospect, responding to AIDS, rethinking transportation, protecting the ozone layer, etc. And it's a good book, and as I say, it comes out annually. The other book that I think, as I've said in some classes, ought to be on your shelf right next to your Bible is this book here called Our Common Future. It's the put out by Oxford Press. It's the popular version of a report made by a commission to the United Nations, chaired by Gro Harlem Brundtland. Brundtland is today the Prime Minister of Norway, and she happens to be female. And she chaired this very important commission. Talks about a lot of the problems in the world and development and environment. And it really concerns all of us, whether you live in the first world or in the third world or in the second world. If you live in this world, this book, I think, is a must. Some of you have been attending Grant Abbott's course on Jewish-Christian relations. And today he was talking about Paul and the Jews. And it's pretty heavy stuff. And we're going to talk about, fortunately, just water. It's that simple. And yet it's a real important element in the world. You can live for up to 21, 28 days without food, but you can't live probably much longer than 3 days without water. Our bodies are made up of mostly water, and every living thing on this planet needs water. You might also be interested to know that the water you drank tonight, at some time or other in its life, because all the water that's in the world was in the world and is in the world and will be in the world, sometime in its past history, undoubtedly went through the kidneys of some of your contemporaries or even a dinosaur or somewhere else. It's reusable, recyclable, and there's only so much of it. And so you can think about that for whatever that means. Let me say one other thing before I really get too deep into water. I was trying to find a quote last night for those of you who were at my chat about military humanitarian aid. And I finally found that one from Eisenhower, and I'd like to just start and just read what he said about, and here he is, a great general, what he had to say about military expenditures. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired, signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. This is not a way of life at all in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. This is Eisenhower in about 53, I believe. Well, we want to talk about water tonight. And I was thinking about water even as Grant Abbott was talking about some of the problems in the Middle East between the Israelis and their Arab neighbors. And I think it's tomorrow night at Forum we'll have a chance to listen to Grant Abbott plus Janet Bowman on the problems of the Middle East. But the Middle East has many probably root causes, but one of the big causes is water. There's no question about it that the waters that flow in the Jordan River are at the basis of the problems between the Jews or the Israelis and the Arab neighbors. One of the reasons why the Jewish army or the Israeli army went into the Golan Heights was to secure the source of that water. In fact, Israel uses five times the amount of water as its Arab neighbors use. And they were concerned that the desert wouldn't flower if they were cut off from the Jordan River. And that's a global issue. And we're going to go around to a few spots in the world where water is the prime problem. Let's look at Ethiopia. About 50 or 60 years ago, Ethiopia was covered, about 60% of it was covered with trees. Today, it's around 4%. The effect upon Ethiopia is evident. If you were aware of things happening in 84, 85, you know that one of the big problems is drought. In fact, the drought was so bad, not only in Ethiopia, but across the whole Sahel, that a great massive effort on the part of those countries that had sufficient food took place. I might say that one time when my wife and I were in Niger, West Africa, even at that time, we did experience an 18-inch rainfall. Can you imagine that? Yeah, one drop fell here and 18 inches away, another drop fell. You can measure many ways, you see. And that literally is true. It was an 18-inch rainfall. And the drought was so bad, though, on a more serious note, that the Baptist were merely sprinkling their converts instead of immersing. And I think it was the Methodists that were kind of just patting them with a damp cloth. And Lutherans were handing out rain checks. But go back to Ethiopia. I was in Mekelle once. Well, I was there several times, but at one time when I was there, I stayed in what was said to be a hotel, and got for my day's use, for toilet and wash and shower and everything, a half a bucket of water. And it's amazing what you can do with a half a bucket of water. Women in Africa can travel 10 miles one way for water for the day. And I'll show you a chart a little later on that shows you how much people use in the industrial north, if you want to call it that, over against people in the south. I told you about the woman who, when I asked her if her children washed their hands before meal, said if they did, she'd kill them. You know, not literally, but figuratively. Because they didn't have that much water to use, available for them to wash their hands. And the ramifications of that, you all know. Dirty hands disease, 80% of the disease we humans contract are born by water. But back to Ethiopia. You see, one of the problems is that there's a limited supply, and then it's poorly used. I've seen women in Ethiopia walk those 10 miles, and come to a dry riverbed, and have to dig down 3 feet before they get to water, dirty water. Water that isn't then boiled, because she has to walk back another 10 miles. She has to gather the wood, and there isn't much of that. And we'll be talking on Thursday now about women and the role they have in the third world. In the highlands of Ethiopia, at Lake Tana, T-A-N-A, is the source of the Blue Nile. That Nile River flows through Ethiopia to Sudan, and then up meet at Sudan with the White Nile, and then goes northward to Egypt. The Sudanese were very concerned when they heard Ethiopia was going to siphon off some of that water to irrigate some 1,500 hectares, which therefore about 3,000 acres only, of water for irrigation purposes. And much concern and much diplomatic traffic occurred between Khartoum and Addis Ababa over this very little thing. I suggest to you that in 1967, the Six-Day War was fought in part to secure, as I said, the source of the River Jordan. Militarily, the Golan Heights, of course, are important, but the water is more important. And it still is today. And Jordan, which is on the West Bank, constantly tries to get the right to drain off more water so that it can irrigate a larger parcel of land. And the Israelis, to my knowledge, although they consume 5 times as much water per person as they're less industrialized and less intensively farmed neighbors, refuse to let any more be taken off. Then you have the problem between Iran and Iraq over the Tigris-Euphrates river valleys. Of course, they have a lot of reasons to be unhappy with each other, but water is their big problem. Water is the same problem that exists between India and Bangladesh and the Ganges River. Where the Indians want to dam up the Ganges in their country and reduce the flow of water to Bangladesh. And that's really one of the big problems. The Bangladeshi, of course, are a rice-growing people, 104 million people in the size of Wisconsin. Water is their lifeblood, and they can't afford to let that happen. And then there's the problem of too much water in that same part of the world. When the monsoons come and the hills of Nepal and India are denuded of trees and the water runs off. And as water becomes a real object of military concern, and as it becomes scarcer and scarcer as our population increases, it can be no longer be treated as free and available to everybody. And conflicts will increase. And the U.S. role in backing friends and allies will involve us more and more than we would like. Indeed, I said last night, our security is going to be at risk. I want to take you to Niger, that West African country, where Lutheran World Relief has been since about 1972. It's interesting that in Niger, there is under the Sahara Desert, a huge well of water. And the people of Niger know this. And they dig wells in order to get to that water. It's down only about 7 meters, which is about 21, 23, 4 feet. And when Lutheran World Relief went in there in 1972 to help with the Great Sahelian Drought, we saw that they had a problem, because one of the things they did when they dug this well by hand, they then lined that well with young saplings and reeds to try and keep the wall of the well from collapsing. And then came the rainy season. And after one or two rainy seasons, that well would collapse. And then the farmer would have to dig another well. And another well. And after a while, the little parcel of land that he had was a series of collapsed wells. Well, LWR devised a well, concrete reinforced well, that to our knowledge will last 50, 60 years. And a beautiful thing about it is that it stays there, it won't collapse. And so the irrigation system they send out, radiating out like spokes on a bicycle to their will be there year after year after year. Now we're concerned about draining, although we won't because we're not doing that much. But you have to be concerned about the environmental impact of draining that water. Those of you who live in Southern California, you know how precious water is. You have to bring it all the way up from Yuba City and further north than that, I understand, to bring it down to where you live. And the fact that the great aquifer down here in Southwest United States being drained by people in Tucson and Phoenix and other places isn't being recharged. It isn't being replenished. And so thoughts now are, where are we going to get water? I read the other day of a plan to bring water from the Hudson Bay down into the Great Lakes, down through the Illinois River to the Mississippi River, and pipe it then over to the Southwest. So precious is water that Saudi Arabia, a few years ago when I was in Africa, conceived the idea of taking an iceberg and pulling it, can you imagine, from the Antarctic and bringing it up to just off their coast and using that water for their needs. Or you can go along the Mekong River, shared by Laos and Thailand and Kampuchea and Vietnam. One reason that area is in such a turmoil is again because of water. Down in Brazil, between Brazil and Argentina, they recently constructed a dam, displacing hundreds and thousands of Brazilians because of the need to store water. Then going back to the Nile, Egypt is our ally. Egypt depends for most of its water from the Nile River. Ethiopia contains the source of the Blue Nile, and the White Nile flows through 8 countries. Egypt's former president, Anwar Sadat, said in 1978, "We depend upon the Nile 100%. We shall not hesitate to go to war over the Nile because it is a matter of life and death." The foreign minister in 85 put it this way, the next war in our region will be over the waters of the Nile, not over politics. And so water is something that we should be concerned about. And we're not in this country. And that's one of the problems I think we have to be concerned about. Not only is it a global concern, it's knocking right at that door, the shortage of water. And we're so wasteful. Let me show you a couple of overheads to show you the importance of water and clean water. And when you realize that less than 50% of the people in the world have access to clean water, and I've shown this in a different context, look at the access, or the access to clean water in relationship to infant mortality rates. The higher the access to clean water, down at the bottom on the right-hand column, depicted by the United States and France, and look at the infant mortality rate over in the left-hand column. It's the lowest. In Afghanistan, where you have among one of the lowest accesses to clean water, look at the infant mortality rate. And not only is that true with infants, it can also be true, unfortunately, with adults. Water is so important that Anwar Sadat said, we'll fight to it, over it. Here's a rather interesting one. Look at the consumption as depicted by those buckets over on the right side. It says here, approximate consumption per person in 10-liter buckets. When you have no tap or standpipe, you have only maybe 11 liters or so. If you have a standpipe, you immediately almost double your consumption. And if you have a standpipe for a single home or a tap, it's now five times. And then the last one, if you have several household taps, like most of us do, look how much water you consume. During the last Super Bowl, Mayor Koch came on the television in New York and asked people not to flush the toilet at halftime. Disperse it throughout the second half. Because if 10 million people were going to flush their toilet at halftime, it would do, well, great damage to the water system. And they couldn't keep it up. New York uses some 2 billion gallons a day. So vital is water. And over here on this side, we know that water weighs 8 pounds a gallon. And I've often thought of getting a 5-gallon bucket like that when I talk to women's groups or men's groups or any group and pass a bucket full of water from head to head and see how long you could hold 40 pounds on the top of your head. And yet that's what women do. If she carries only enough water for her family, a husband, mother, and 5 children to survive each day, she would need to fetch about 40 liters. But to keep them all clean and healthy, she would have to fetch 200 liters a day. Impossible in many parts of the third world. And yet we take water so much for granted that we leave the water tap on as we brush our teeth instead of shutting it off. We do it while we're shaving, we men at least. We're wasteful. What can be done about the situation? Let me just read a few things from Our Common Future that touch on this issue. An estimated 60 million people die of diarrheal diseases related to unsafe drinking water. 60 million die from diarrhea because they have unsafe drinking water. Another one that startled me. If I can find it. The deforestation and runoff accelerates soil erosion and siltation of rivers and lakes, polluting these rivers and lakes to such a degree that often fish life and other animal life is available, and I'm paraphrasing, is available to the forester, to the hunter, to the fisherman, and to general entertainment or recreation. What are we doing? What should be done? And that's the question I think that needs to be solved. Do any of you have problems with water? No. You do.
Southern California.
What are they doing about that? Anything?
Well, in the Los Angeles area were blamed for taking water from Northern California. Mono Lake has gone down significantly, and there's, I think, a lot of future problems coming up out of that situation. We try in Southern California to educate people, but it's such a tourist area. And we notice the difference, for instance, when we have guests from the Middle West, the length of their showers compared to our showers. Sometimes the shower will go for 5 minutes, 7 minutes. And we try to take less, we try to take minute showers. Turn it on, soak yourself up, rinse off. But still people waste a lot of water.
In the region surrounding Richland, there are beginning to be wells which show evidence of the irrigation chemicals which are becoming a problem.
Fertilizer.
Yeah. We in southeastern Minnesota have the problem with polluting of groundwater. Yes. Supply, we have enough, but it's not drinkable in some cases.
About 3 or 4 or 5 counties, it's so polluted it's undrinkable. Can you imagine that in Minnesota?
Yeah.
And we're talking in some instances of deep wells, 400 or 500 feet deep in southeastern, way in the far southeast corner of Minnesota, the rock structure and so on is such that it goes straight down very deep into the aquifers.
In some of the national parks, there's a problem with a bacteria, by which I think is called Giardiasis. I was hiking across Grand Canyon a few years ago, and when I got out of the canyon, my diarrhea was finished. I mean, I was having diarrhea problems as long as we were hiking across the canyon.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah?
Well, my father has farms in Iowa, and the groundwater is real bad. And the babies that are born in the Cherokee and Marquette and Sioux City area have to go under phototherapy because their liver can't handle when they're first born.
We have a, I don't know if he wants to speak, but we have a friend from Germany here, Klaus from Wuppertal. And maybe you remember a couple of years ago when that chemical plant in Basel spilled. Do you have any comment? What's happening in Germany, Klaus?
A lot of people living near the River Rhine depend on that water. And so when it was polluted by that big disaster, they had to take water from different areas. In some other places of my country, the same problems as you have described appear because of the farmers using so many fertilizers, the remainders of which stay in the groundwater. And that problem has been realized, and farmers are urged to use less. But what I think, these people are under some kind of pressure too. They try to produce as much as possible to earn a living. So I see this problem embedded in a bigger context.
You know, and this isn't only the fertilizer, it's a herbicide they use too. A herbicide, I think, is worse than the fertilizer. Because I know they, in Minnesota, well, any place, it is showing up, like Lloyd says, in our waters there. It isn't only just nitrates from stool or animal waste, but it's herbicides from, and also this, what do they call that? It comes out of these, your transformers.
PCBs.
Yeah, and that is bad because, you know, I hope there's nobody here from Wisconsin, but at one time we have a big abandoned oil or iron mines 35 miles east of where him and I live. And we allowed some years ago to bring this over in 50-gallon steel drums, and they just dumped it into these. Now this is what's happened, that's why our water's polluted. Dumped in these iron mines, abandoned iron mines. Of course they've rusted over the years. It's down in shale rock, it's gone, it's in the water, and there's no answer to it. I mean, I don't know how deep they'd have to go to get it.
You had something.
Well, we're from Portland, Oregon area, which is known for its wonderful water, but we live in a community southeast of there, which we get our water from the Clackamas River, a different source than the city of Portland. And our water was so bad that it was from a, taken from a well from the Clackamas River. It was just downstream of the landfill. And the water was orange coming out the tap for years. And finally, the people complained enough that the city contracted with them for another source. But, you know, who knows what we were drinking for all those years. And the insides of our dishwashers and everything was orange. And the bottom of our toilet bowls were orange from the water. It was awful. I was going to mention something else. I mean, we often don't know what we're doing and don't realize it till many years later. I recently did a report for a class I took on environmental health and on the effects of the plutonium production at Hanford in Richland, Washington. Fusion products from that process were found 300 miles off the coast.
Of Oregon,
off the coast, 300 miles out to sea, and they had, and they don't even know where it ended. I mean, that's how far out they tested. They thought it would be far beyond where they would find anything, and they don't know how much further the products were.
Does that go into the Columbia River? Is that?
Yeah, that's down all the way down the Columbia, and 300 miles out into the
sea. Probably about 300 miles along the Columbia before it hits the ocean, then 300 miles beyond that.
Mm-hmm. It did at one time during
the late push,
no longer doing, but it's still there.
But the effects of that is in our environment.
I was encouraged, on this question of fertilizer, I was very encouraged to see one program that indicated an Iowa farmer who did the fertilizer thing, but now realized he will do better by going back to the natural way of using his manure and plowing under plants
crop
put in there for fertilization. Yep. So there's apparently a small trend of switching away from the vast fertilizer thing that people are caught up in.
Well, I think more people are going for that too.
When the farmer's well becomes polluted so he can't drink it or can't give it to livestock, then you get there.
It's real close to home.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of those fertilizers have been outlawed in the United States, but they're showing up in Central America. And so
pesticides.
Yeah, and the pesticides.
How many years have it been since DDT was outlawed here?
Yeah.
Over the third world, they're using it in Tanzania. I was there 2 years ago. They're using it there.
Yeah. Janet?
I also live in Oregon, which is known as a high water state. It's thought of as having a lot of water, but there are critical groundwater areas in the northeast part of the state where the farmers are using for their fields water that is thousands of years old and are draining aquifers that recharge at the rate of fractions of an inch per year, and they're taking feet out of that aquifer per year.
Right.
Yeah. Out of bucks.
We
one over here.
Problems with pesticides and fertilizers too would be a lot less. They're used on a need basis, whereas major industrial companies that are marketing these chemicals, DuPont, Exxon, and Shell, and the others have gone to rather than selling them on a need basis, that in order to maximize their profits and also figure out accurately how much these chemicals are being able to sell per year. What they did was that they started marketing them, saying that they had to use them on a scheduled basis, that you're supposed to use it on a schedule, whether it was needed or not. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
We're talking about the water level a while ago, and I forgot that we do have some concerns in Minnesota, and I'm sure this is true other places. The World Trade Center opened in St. Paul, a very large building, couple of years ago, and they are cooling that with groundwater. So they're pumping, and I don't have the numbers, but just millions of gallons of water, and then after it goes through their system, then it's dumped into the Mississippi. So it does not go back into the aquifer, it goes down the Mississippi, and they're losing, we're losing the water table.
Yeah.
Well, you can hear from the many voices here the issue that we have to contend with. And unfortunately, we're not really doing a great deal about it. Our common future points out that unless we do something about it, the world is going to be in a real difficult situation. When you have, for example, in the Ganges River, over 500 cities, I think there were some 500 cities or villages pumping raw sewage into the Ganges River, further down where people were then taking water to drink. What's going to happen? We talked earlier, last week maybe it was, that we're one world and that the disease isn't going to stop at a border just because the border between Canada and the United States is there. Disease is going to move across. In Europe, there is something being done. And maybe, Klaus, you'd want to speak about the Green Party and some of the things that it is advocating.
Yeah. I mean, pressure has been exercised on governments, especially, or I would say starting from movements such as the Green Party. Nowadays, as I've read even in Great Britain with Margaret Thatcher as Prime Minister, she points out green issues now. So even there, these topics have been realized. And I think that is the hope I see, that more people become conscious of that and try to put pressure on parties, on governments.
You know, I think one of the answers to stop people from consuming so much water was put a big price on it. When you get in people's billfolds, most of the time that helps a lot.
Yes? The idea was that we should increase the cost of water.
That's right.
Well, that's true. Not only of water, but of gasoline, petroleum. Huh?
True.
When I lived in South Africa, it was $2.50 a gallon. You decided, you know, whether you were going to take a trip or not. When it cost you something like, you know, $50 to fill up your car, you're not using it very often.
But doesn't that really put a heavy burden on the poor? That
exactly
something really needed for life, and hardship for them.
Yep, you put your finger on a very important thing, and that's one of the problems with the International Monetary Fund that keeps trying to do upward pricing of food and fuel and other needs impacts mostly on the poor. And that's something we should be concerned about as American Christians and our role in that pressure from IMF upon Venezuela or upon Sudan or upon a few other places in the world, quite a few places. Well, I wanted to bring to your attention, and we're going to close a little early this evening, the problem of water. Tomorrow night and tomorrow afternoon, you can see in this room at 12:30 a VCR on flying quilts, it's called. It's a 28-minute VCR on what happens to the quilts that are made in your church. Not only the quilts, but also the health kits, kitty kits, school kits. Huh? You'll see that these items go, in this case, to Tanzania, but they get there. Huh? And tomorrow night we're going to be talking about population. And we'll go the full hour tomorrow night when we talk about some of the problems that population is presenting to the world. Anybody know how many people there are in the world, by the way? 5. Well, it came in August of 87, was the 5 billionth baby born, and that was in Yugoslavia, so somebody figured it out. And that we grow by 1 billion every 12 years now.
What's the population of China? You're quite.
1.2, roughly. India, about 900 million. And Germany has got a zero population. It's getting smaller.
Is that right, Klaus, or are they?
I think the trend has changed in the last year.
Okay. But they were getting smaller, along with Denmark and a few others. Okay. Thank you very much for this evening.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
I just wonder if you could talk in terms of Lutheran World Relief, when you gave the example of the irrigation, the well pipes. Could you just say something about the percentage of the money that goes for development in that sense to improve the situation over against direct relief?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm always happy, and we're going to talk about LWR on Friday, but just to answer your question, approximately, our aim is 80% for development and 20% for relief. That hasn't been the case since 1984 or 5 because of Ethiopia. And it's been roughly, at that time, about, 40%, maybe 45%. And 60 or 55, huh? So we've dropped down. We're spending more effort now in relief. And one of the problems, that too, is brought about by water. The fact that floods are more severe now than they have been in the past. Why? Because of deforestation and all those other problems. And droughts are happening more often. They used to be on almost an 11 or 12 year cycle, and now they're shorter and they're deeper. The distance between droughts are now somewhere, someone was figuring around 10, and even 1 year makes a big difference, huh? But we spend, and then we spend, and by the way, I can give you something. I don't want to take them back to New York. Let me get something. And I'd be pleased if you took one. I could wait till later, but some of you may leave before. Here is our annual report. You can help yourself to that. Also, a little brochure on how to make quilts and kitty kits. And you can do that. And as I say, I would be happy if you wanted to help yourself to any of these materials. If I can get them apart, you can have them. Why don't you pass some of these around? And there you'll see on the back page are what we are spending in each of the areas. And I might say that our administrative expense is around 4% or 5%. So it's not very large. And on the back page, you see that last year, our total disbursements were 41 million. 41.3 million. And you also see there the programs that we operate, agricultural development, institution building, etc. Why don't I pass these out too?
Now, out of your development funds, is there? Do you divide that up by water projects, or is that one of the major?
Yes, you can see on the back page. It'll show you right back here. Agricultural development, institution building, community development, relief services. There you see $14.3 million in relief out of a total disbursement. So it's even more. Of 22, almost 23 million. So that's two-thirds, 66% roughly as relief. The rest is development.
Is World Hunger separate entirely from Lutheran World Relief?
I don't know what you mean by world hunger.
But no, the world hunger that we give to them there.
Yes. Now, when you give to your local congregation to ELCA or LCMS World Hunger,
yeah,
we get 30 cents for each dollar you give.
Oh.
And we get of a dollar for world hunger. LWR gets 30 cents. LWF in Geneva gets 30 cents. Global Missions, DGM, Division for Global Missions, gets 13 cents. And that comes out to 73 cents. And then the rest goes to administration, education development, advocacy, domestic hunger. There may be a fifth one, parish education. But theoretically, 73 cents goes overseas of your world hunger dollar.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in seeing that film tomorrow, Flying Quilts, that'll be at 12:30, and then tomorrow night we'll talk about population. On Thursday night, we'll talk about women in development. And on Friday night, we'll talk about LWR. Saba, thank you very much.
Thank you.